Today's Issues continues on AFR.
And welcome back to this Wednesday edition of Today's Issues. And you're saying, okay, where's Ed? Well, Ed had to go to a meeting also. So the news team is staying around for there this half hour today. I was mentioning that Chris might go, but he's now a squatter. He's taken over a chair, and he's staying on, and we are joined by...
I deserve this.
We're joined by Steve Jordahl.
That's right.
Who Hello. Is normally here.
That's right, but not here. I'm sitting, if those of you who are watching on Facebook Live, I'm now sitting in the big seat that Ed was in.
That's
so
right.
I feel empowered, even though I have no power. I'm feeling very empowered.
President Jordahl.
And a little bit Italian.
Hey, listen, last hour we talked a lot about what happened in Washington yesterday, the whole resolution in the House against the president and Nancy Pelosi being chastised for using the word racist to describe the president.
Right.
Even a member of her own party, her second in command, Steny Hoyer, had to take over the chair because the chairperson left in disgust. Steny Hoyer takes over and has to rule on a complaint from Republican Doug Collins that according to parliamentary rules,
right,
you're not allowed to use those kind of derogatory terms to describe the president. And Steny Hoyer had to get up and agree with the Republican that indeed his boss, Nancy Pelosi, had broken the rules. Now, the Democrats control the House and they still won the vote eventually, but it was a day of drama.
Quite the day in the House yesterday.
On the House. Now, the other thing's been talked about. Is this a clever ploy by President Trump, what he tweeted out the other day, and Chris read for us in the last hour the exact tweet? Was this a clever effort by President Trump to paint the squad as the voice, as the domineering force in the Democratic Party?
I've heard those accusations. I've heard people on both sides, the never-Trumpers, are saying that he's not smart enough to do that because they can't stand a lot of a smart president. But he has made them the voice of the Democrat Party. I've heard people saying that the Democrats now have four speakers of the House.
Yes.
And the other thing that I noticed the other day was that in the middle of this whole uproar over these tweets, the Trump administration completely revamped the asylum process.
Mm-hmm.
Into this country,
yeah,
making people who want to apply for asylum do it in their home countries or the first country they come to. No one is talking about that at all.
Yeah,
and so maybe this was a way of distraction so he could get some stuff done. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if when this dies down, the wall is built.
Now, of course, there's been much talk about how is his base responding to this. Well, it's really interesting. I was just reading during the news break a new poll out this morning, a Reuters Ipsos poll, taken in the last 48 hours, all right, since the president tweeted those words out. Here's the headline. Support for U.S. President Donald Trump increased slightly among Republicans after his Twitter remarks. The national survey conducted on Monday and Tuesday after Trump told the lawmakers that they should go back and help fix the totally broken and crime-infested places from which they came, showed his net approval among members of his Republican Party rose by 5 percentage points to 72% compared with a similar poll that ran last week. So, you do have Republicans, Kevin McCarthy, several others coming out. We had the Senate Majority Leader yesterday saying that they don't believe the president is racist. So, he may have succeeded, at least amongst his base, of hitting a tune that will carry forward into next year's election, that these four, the squad, have taken over the Democratic Party. They are radical leftists. They want open borders. They want, you know, medical care, free medical care for everybody, tuition free, the whole thing. And he may have succeeded to a certain point, at least at this point, in energizing the base a little bit.
You know, Chris, I don't know if you agree with this or not, but the comments by the president are very anti-establishment. He's calling out the the thought, the belief system, not the race of these people, at least that's what the argument is, which shows me that the whole nationalist, the thing that got him elected, the outside of Washington movement is still alive.
Yeah, I think so. And I think a lot of people agree with the president. A lot of people would also say that, you know, maybe he's the reason that started this whole controversy because he's the person that sent out the tweet. But they also tweet a lot of things, too. You know, Ilhan Omar has tweeted out things that were very controversial, anti-Israel, anti-Semitic. People have said as much. The House actually was going to take a resolution against her, and then they decided not to because people thought, well, we're going to look like we're picking on, you know, minorities and religious people and things like that. So they're holding the president to a standard that they themselves, Democrats, did not hold against Ilhan Omar, the representative from Minnesota.
All right. Well, while much of the focus has been on this controversy, other things have been happening in Washington, and we want to bring one story in particular to your attention this morning, Steve. It has to do with an appearance of an official from Google on the Hill yesterday before a hearing, and basically it was a Senate hearing as far as I know.
It was.
It has to do with what the charge is from conservatives is that Google is anti-conservative. That's one of the charges.
Well, it was a very interesting hearing yesterday, and Google sent their vice president of government relations, Karan Bhatia, to the Hill to talk to Republicans and Democrats. And by the way, Mazie Hirono was the Senate ranking member in that committee, the Justice Committee, and she had some pretty pointed things to talk about with regard to Russian interference. So really,
this was
kind of. They were looking at different things. Of course, yeah. Mazie Hirono wasn't buying into the conservative bias at all. Mm-hmm. But they were asked, and I think I don't know if you mentioned Dennis Prager. He was one of the witnesses later on at this, and his
conservative talk show host
and the author, at least the sponsor of many, many videos that they put out, 5-minute videos on government, on all different kinds of topics from a conservative point of view, that had been blocked by Google, who owns YouTube, saying that it's under a pornography thing. And I mean, we're talking about the Ten Commandments, a video on the Ten Commandments, on the Gettysburg Address. Just these things are just, it just was ridiculous. And so Bhatia was asked by Josh Hawley. He talked about...
He's a Republican from Missouri.
From Missouri. You should see, you got to listen to this. This is how he sets up Bhatia. This is regarding censorship that Google is accused of. This is cut 10.
It is both contrary to our mission, contrary to our business interest, and it would be incompatible with the systems that we build to work political bias in there. We do not have political bias.
And inconsistent with your basic values, I imagine you would say.
Inconsistent with our values.
Except for when you do it in China, right?
You're
happy to censor for the repressive authoritarian Chinese regime, like for instance with Google.cn, happy to censor away any mention of Tiananmen Square. You have been more than happy to partner with the most repressive authoritarian regime on the planet, all for profits. You won't submit to a third-party audit. You just answered Senator Blumenthal no to that. You won't commit to me that you won't engage in censorship when it suits your purposes in China and the Chinese market, for instance, in the future. Why would anybody believe you now when you say we don't ever impose an ideological agenda?
Wow.
Yeah.
That was a moment.
He laid the trap and sprung it, man.
Wow, that's incredible. And what he was saying there, Senator Hawley, was when they're doing business with China, they cooperate fully with the Chinese Communist government, not even allowing stories about Tiananmen Square, up. And so it's, we appear to be heading in a direction in this country where social media, whether it's Facebook, whether it's Google, whether it's Twitter, because all of them are facing bias charges against conservatives.
They are.
And conservatives ought to be very concerned.
And we heard from Bhatia here, who, first of all, denied that Google was in China anymore, the end of that relationship 10 years ago, he said. But later on, he kind of talked into this whole Prager University thing, and he says, well, it's because of some offensive content. I think the Ten Commandments, for example, video talked about murder, to which Prager later on says, well, I guess we're going to have to issue a new video called The Nine Commandments if we can't talk about murder, and that's going to get us banned under this pornography thing. It's not just pornography, it's offensive content. So, but that wasn't the big headline from this. The big headline, I don't see anybody picking it up this morning, was what happened later on when a psychologist by the name of Robert Epstein, talked about the influence that Google has as it places its ads in its search engines on voting. And I want you to listen to this. This is Senator Ted Cruz and Robert Epstein. Epstein's done the research on how search bias shifts votes towards certain candidates. This is cut 11.
You testified before this committee that Google's manipulation of votes gave at least 2.6 million additional votes to Hillary Clinton in the year 2016. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And I want to make sure I understand. You personally supported and voted for Hillary Clinton.
I was a very strong public supporter of Hillary Clinton, yes.
Your testimony is that Google is, through bias in search results, manipulating voters in a way they're not aware of.
On a massive scale.
You said in subsequent elections, Google and Facebook and Twitter and big tech manipulation could manipulate as many as 15 million votes in a subsequent election?
In 2020, if all these companies are supporting the same candidate, there are 15 million votes on the line that can be shifted without people's knowledge and without leaving a paper trail for authorities to trace. In 2018, I'm sure they were more aggressive. We have lots of data to support that. And in 2020, you can bet that all of these companies are going to go all out. And the methods that they're using are invisible. They're subliminal. They're more powerful than most any effects I've ever seen in the behavioral sciences. And I've been in the behavioral sciences for almost 40 years.
Fred, you talk about Russian interference in our elections?
Well, let's unpackage this. There's a lot of stuff there. So Mr. Epstein, first of all, he confesses that he was a Hillary Clinton fan and voted for her.
Yes.
In 2016. So he's not a partisan Republican or a conservative talking here.
He said, when asked that, he said, well, that would be a grave understatement if I was conservative or Republican. He said he loves democracy more than party, though. That's why he brought this
up. That's what he said. All right. He used the term subliminal. Now, from what you understand from his testimony, is he saying that Google controls the ads on its site with an aim of convincing people to vote Democrat versus Republican? Am I reading what he's saying there correctly?
That's his contention, and it comes with things like, and the reason he says it's subliminal, the one example he used is that they can send out a go vote message, just a banner that says go vote at the top of the page,
right,
and it will turn out a bunch of people to vote, and they control who they send that to. If they send that to all the Democrats,
but how do they know they're Democrats?
Well, you can tell from their page. You can tell from their worldview. They know a lot more about you because you're
all right. So Google is monitoring your searches.
Absolutely.
And so they probably have an algorithm that says George, who lives on Brown Street in Dallas, the algorithm kind of determines that he's a Democrat.
He's looked at how to donate to Hillary Clinton's campaign 20 times.
Right? All right. So the algorithm digests that and then starts sending these little ads to his home computer, go vote.
That, yes. That's one of the things he says has happened. The other thing is when you put in something like President Trump, if you see the first 17 results are racist, homophobic, wall and negative things, that plants a subliminal message in your head about the president.
Oh, that's amazing.
And he's done this scientifically. So he says that he has data to back up that it wasn't just theory or possible, but that it actually happened.
Chris, This is frightening for our democracy.
It is. It is. And we've had a lot of senators, I believe even Hawley is open to the idea, Senator Hawley is open to the idea of government getting more involved in what an online platform can and cannot do. The concern there is then you have the federal government telling an entity, thou shalt do this. Mm. And this is the same federal government that some people might say would screw up a two-car parade if they had the opportunity. So it's kind of concerning to see what, if anything, government would do, because there are a lot of things that government has gotten involved with and things did not turn out better. Healthcare is a good example. Obamacare caused a lot of problems when it was intended to help people, specifically the uncovered, get covered, but even those folks have terrible coverage.
So I suppose it comes down to the United States prizes itself in being a capitalist country, and that we don't want the government interfering with private business. But when you have such behemoths controlling social media, then maybe we ought to be concerned, but I'm not sure if conservatives are going to advocate at this point that the government, certainly not like they do in third world countries, nationalize companies like this.
I don't think nationalization is the conservative answer to this, but there is a thing like happened with Ma Bell where they can decentralize some of this power from Google and split up the company. YouTube as its own leadership and
right.
its own company.
Yeah.
The other thing is that... and I said this, I was talking with Dan Gaynor a while back from Media Research Center. I think I said this yesterday on the show, that he said this is the first time in our country's history where you really cannot exist in society without having an arm or a leg in social media. You just can't. You can't do business without a Facebook page. You can't. It's become integral. It's become a public square. And giving free speech to the public square is a governmental function. So there is probably court precedents where they might be able to step in and say, this isn't just a platform now, this is a publisher, and it's a forum that everybody uses, and it should be neutral.
Well, we license radio stations.
Right.
And we license TV stations, mm-hmm. Which are used, media used by the public. Mm-hmm. So perhaps a solution might be, somebody might propose, that we start licensing these people. And when you license, like American Family Radio is licensed.
Right.
And we have to follow certain regulations.
Right.
Maybe that's the answer.
What's interesting, though, is where is that fee going to – who's going to end up paying that fee? Because Facebook, for example, would pass it on, you would think, to people with Facebook pages. But Facebook, if you go to Facebook and you go to the login page, it says it's free and always will be, or something to that effect. So they're going to have to go back on their promise or guarantee, if you want to call it that. We'll see whether or not some people have an issue with that. But, you know, it wasn't that long ago that President Obama, his administration, wanted to do things like net neutrality, and they wanted to classify the Internet as a public utility under 1930s law. And I'm interested, just as an individual, to see what the argument's going to be against efforts by maybe even some Republicans to regulate the Internet to put a stop to some of this nonsense, because now the shoe's on the other foot. What are you going to say about that, Mr. Yeah. Conservative?
Yeah. I wanted to bring a story to you guys. This is really instructive to me and a little bit horrific. So the New York Times, what would you say, Fred, is one of the most glorious achievements that the United States of America has ever made, and a hint is we're coming up on the anniversary of it.
That's Apollo 11.
Apollo 11 and the landing on the moon, right?
That's right.
Well, today, the New York Times comes out with an article that says to make it to the moon, women have to escape Earth's gender bias.
Oh, no.
And they say everything in space carries the legacy of Apollo. It was designed by men for men. If we do not acknowledge the gender bias of the early space program, it becomes difficult to move past it. One of the most compelling things about NASA is its approach to failure. Now, this is kind of absurd, and we can kind of laugh at it, but I want to draw a direct line, if I can, between this and the way that we're tearing down Jefferson statues and Civil War monuments and everything. Hmm. We paint them with racial or whatever, and then they become bad. And it's a way of dismantling U.S. history, and the left is very good at this. So what they're doing is... They're injecting an element of failure in one of the most successful U.S. endeavors ever, And they're saying that it is now a gender bias. The NASA program is gender biased, and therefore it's you can start discrediting it. And there's a direct line, I believe, between this kind of nitpicky attack and down the line what we see with some of these historical figures who we're just dismissing out of hand because of something in their past that might have been unpolitically correct.
Did they not mention the space shuttle program and some of the tragedies in the space shuttle program? There were women aboard those space shuttles.
Sure. And they say not deliberately for men, but perhaps, but women were not allowed in the astronaut program until the late 70s, and none flew until Sally Ride became the first American woman in space in 1983. By this point, the space program was built around male bodies.
I'm sorry, that logically, rationally does not make any sense. They did not design the seats in the Apollo program just for men.
Well, no, it doesn't, but it does make sense if you're looking at it from an intersectionality or the identity politics.
Identity.
If you're looking at it from an identity politics thing, this is the way they do it.
You know, and what's interesting is women have played a role in the space race for decades. PBS just did a special on this the blonde-haired lady that was sitting there amongst all the men. She was a part of the mathematical equations and things like that. We just had a movie, the Hidden Figures.
Hidden Figures about three African-American.
Right. Physicists. So women have been a part of this effort for decades, and I have not seen this article. I would doubt they really gave any of that any mention if they did at all.
Sadly, it is just the politics of division.
Yeah.
Is what we're facing in this country.
We can't have anything the United States has done that's exemplary. It's a bad country in need of rescue.
Yeah, and that's and I think, honestly, that is what President Trump has tapped into. People are frustrated. They are angry at the far left, be it the New York Times, be it the Squad, whatever the case may be, that are tearing this country apart.
Right.
Which is why I believe in 2016, Donald Trump, businessman, not politician, comes along and says, I want to make America great again.
Right.
And he has, despite the negative press constantly against him, he has succeeded in doing so economically. Things have not been this good in decades economically, across racial lines, but our mainstream media. This is what disturbs me the most, because I've been in news media now for more than four decades, is that there's always been bias.
Mm-hmm.
But now they're unapologetic about it.
Yes.
You know, I was reading in the last hour the AP story on Justice Stevens, who passed away. And AP celebrating the fact that he was involved with getting prayer out of public schools. The AP sees that as a success. So they are part of that bias that is, I believe, tearing this country apart. And there is still a large segment of our society that's saying no to this kind of thing, and that we will fight it. And that's why I agree with a lot of people that say, you know, if the Democratic Party and the Squad continue down the road that they are, that the American people will turn against them next year.
I bet.
We'll have to wait and see. All right, that's the Wednesday edition of Today's Issues, the standby crew.
That's right.
For this last half hour from American Family News. Chris, good to have you with us.
Thank you.
And Steve, as always, Fred Jackson. And the regular crew will be back tomorrow. They're not too far away, folks. Stand by for more great programming here on American Family Radio. We'll see you again real soon.